Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I always forget what we're supposed to say next.
Nothing. We just stop.
We're supposed to take our clothes off.
No, that's disclosing, not unclothing.
This is the opposite of, I'm supposed to diss my clothes?
Yes, just disrespect your clothing.
Okay. Well, the personal wealth coach is not coincidentally, not only, it's a double negative, a radio program that airs on Saturday mornings over KTEM in the internet. It is also the name of an investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, but in no way does that imply approval by the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, or disapproval, as the case may be. That's based in Salado, Texas, and the two guys who are in here, Jeff and
Jake,
also happen to be the principal advisors at said investment advisory firm.
If you would like to visit the principal's office, please come see us.
Yes, and if you've done bad things and your teacher doesn't like you, you're certainly welcome to come visit the principal's office. And now we have disclosed that we have we're schizophrenic.
I'm schizophrenic, and so am I.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Actually, we're quadraphonic.
I think that's actually supposed to be like a multiple personality syndrome rather than schizophrenic, but it's close enough. Most, you know, should be fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Multiple personality syndrome? I don't think I've heard of that one. So, whatever. I mean, good. Anyway.
Well, which personality has
you
heard of?
I would say at this point that you could call in to 773-1400, except that you can't because
you can try, but it won't work.
Well, there's competing hypotheses as to why it doesn't work.
I'll give you the headline.
What's that?
Shocking event prevents phones from working.
Well, theoretically, there's two possible reasons because they occurred at the same time, approximately. One is President Trump was elected and the phone stopped working, or two, lightning struck and the phone stopped working. And there's conspiracy theories are floating around as to which one is correct.
Yeah, it depends on who you asked. Either one could be shocking.
Right.
Shouldn't be, but
well,
could
actually,
be.
It's not shocking at all because it doesn't work. So we will have to talk to each other. Now we have a guest in here.
Yes.
Who may or may not say anything during the entire program. He's got a microphone, and it says KTEM News Radio 14. Yeah, News Radio 14, which they don't use as a byline anymore. But
you've got yours, one of those on your.
I know,
well.
I know, but you don't. So.
No, I don't.
And as a result, he may or may not say anything during the entire program because he's smarter than both of us put together.
This is Neil Gombeski, who is a CFA or a CFA from Boston.
CFA.
Would you like to say hello?
He's from Boston.
Hello.
He said hello.
Okay, that's,
there we go.
He did say something, so that's good. Okay, that means that CFAs can talk. We should note that down in our notebooks. Okay.
Yes, being noted as we speak.
Let's see. Did anything happen this week?
Anything exciting happened this week? Let's see. Think back.
I know something that happened.
Let's see.
The Dow climbs 5.4% propelled by Trump's victory.
Right.
Which I think is really cool because not only did the so-called experts firmly predict that Trump couldn't win the nomination and then predict that he couldn't possibly win the presidency.
They also predicted that if
the market would crash.
Right. What we've determined from all of this is that the people with great confidence in their predictions should be ignored. So, as we're going to add some confidence to ourselves in that over the last several months, we have said repeatedly that the market doesn't care who's elected. The market is us, and the end result is that we want some certainty. The market wants to know who's going to be president. As soon as there's a lot of uncertainty in the polls, the market gets volatility. No uncertainty. Market goes, okay, good news going forward. And we predicted that if Hillary Clinton was elected, we'd have a run-up in the market. And if Donald Trump was elected, we'd have a run-up in the market. So we could have been completely wrong on either side, but in this case, we weren't. So we're going to act like we had a lot more confidence in our decisions than we actually did.
Actually, both sides were correct.
Both sides were correct?
Because during the night, both sides of that discussion were correct. Because during the evening, right after it was clear that he was going to be elected,
the Dow
futures market dropped 600 points.
But that's not the real market.
Which is worse. It actually dropped 650 at the peak, which was actually further than it fell on 9/11.
I have had calls about that because the news media after the election, people that stayed up late afterwards, have called to me and asked me how it was that the market dropped. I mean, and they were terrified that the market has dropped. And I said, no, the market's up quite a lot. We're breaking new records. What do you mean? And well, the market dropped. The media was telling me about it after the election, and I'm really concerned. I said, well, that's not the real market. That's the futures market, which is just about as accurate as a magic eight ball. But people can lose money in it. I consider it it's a form of Vegas out of New York.
It's a vague form of Vegas.
A vague form of Vegas, yes. In New York, in that you can bet money with no purchase, just that you'll have money. There's an imaginary contract. Well, it's not imaginary. It's an electronic contract. So in the computer's mind, it's imaginary. But it's got good memory. And if you make the wrong guess, you lose money. If you make the right guess, you make money. Did you actually own anything? Not really. So it's very much like playing sports numbers.
It's legalized gambling.
Legalized gambling. The futures market is legalized gambling. Yeah.
So, okay, so did anything else happen?
I think we had an election.
You did?
That was mentioned in
the
passing.
I mentioned that because it in light of the market, because of...
Right. There are some good numbers.
He trumped the Democrats.
There were good numbers on productivity. We just had, we're going to hit these later on as well, but the numbers on foreclosure had a little spike in October. The foreclosure numbers jumped up, and I've got some information on that later. So the productivity's up, unemployment's down, foreclosure's suddenly up, but not year over year, just for the month.
Well,
what else has gone on?
One of our favorite. We have two favorite departments or sections or whatever. Actually, they're bureaus.
Bureau of Labor Statistics
and the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Those are two favorite parts of the government
because we like bureaucrats.
Right.
When they admit that they're bureaucrats. It's the bureaucrats that won't admit they're bureaucrats.
Those are the ones you got to watch.
We
got to
watch
right?
those guys.
I would really love to go visit both the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Bureau of Economic Analysis. I mean,
pieces of furniture.
There is entire buildings full of geeks.
All they do is sit around and compare
numbers
with each other. Have you seen the spreadsheet this morning? They really have to believe in what they're doing. Anyway, they did provide some. You were saying,
well,
finish your thoughts, as it says on the piece of paper.
The other thing I thought was really fascinating is that, and this is kind of a slow thing that comes out, is that the I already showed you that. The kind of a low, slow thing that comes out is that layoffs as a percentage of the workforce hit the lowest number ever in September. Now, it takes a little while for the Bureau of Labor Statistics to get that kind of information out.
Wait.
Because it's September that they got it out for.
Right. Let me say something, because a lot of people that have never been laid off don't even know what that means. And there are a lot of people that haven't been laid off. Laid off means that the company is getting rid of employees not because they've been bad, not because they've done something horrible, but because the company's not profitable and they need to cut what they're paying. So they very sadly go to their employees and say, I'm going to have to ask you to leave, but here's a package to go with it, and you get unemployment insurance to cover you during this time period.
Well, sometimes it's nice that way, and sometimes it's just, guess what, we're out of business, you're laid off.
So can't make the payroll this month, see you later. That's at a record low.
And you know, that to me is a very significant thing. It means that, first off, when you combine it with the fact that wages are rising faster than inflation, which is
right, that's a
which
big
means
deal.
There'll be more money available for people to spend, and fewer people are being laid off, that means that there are fewer people who are losing their money to spend. When we add all this together,
there's one more piece.
There is?
Yeah, the piece you mentioned it in the newsletter, so it's
what
really
is
important
it? Go ahead.
Thing.
Yes.
voluntary resignation is up.
Yeah, but
that means they went to their boss and they said, "You can take this job and I quit." Yes, you can take this job and I quit.
Right.
And that's a very good piece of news. It's up. Why is that good? When we say layoffs are down and that's good, voluntary self-removal from a job is up, and that's a good thing. It's because, if you'll recall back not very long ago during the Great Recession, people did not volunteer to leave their jobs. They did not say, "I don't like this job anymore, I'm going to leave," because it was unlikely that they were going to find another job in any reasonable amount of time. So this is very generalized. I'm sure there were more than one person in that time period that did actually say, "Take this job and shovel it," as was quoted. That's a Demolition Man quote.
There's another big piece of news in the economy.
What's that?
Uber's first self-driving 18-wheeler made its first delivery, and it was...
I covered that a month ago on this program.
The 50,000 beers?
Yes.
We could
cover it again, because it's big news, and it really it's appearing on Facebook at this point, and people are recognizing it. I don't know why it wasn't trumpeted everywhere, but... I think it's very appropriate that the first 18-wheeler delivery was of beer.
No, but not a beer. 50,000.
50,000
beers. I think this is significant. This is one of those things that'll go down in the history books. So the first self-driving 18-wheeler truck is its first payload, 50,000 beer.
Now, I've got a...
But they don't even tell you what brand the beer was, so what do we...
It was Budweiser.
Okay.
There is a nice little piece of irony here, because the fact that the truck delivered it without a driver is an incredible increase in productivity, and the fact that there was 50,000 beers delivered is an incredible drop in productivity.
No. I don't know. You got to think, if the beer is being drunk after work, which we presume
we
in
hope.
Most cases.
We would hope.
Then
it could be the computer was drinking it on the way.
I think it's an increase in productivity, because it means that there are 50,000 doses of a legal medication that prevents, that makes for fewer psychiatrists.
I'm going to leave that
it's
hanging.
It's self-medication, alcohol.
I'm going to not touch that one.
Well, if you touch a beer, your finger will be smelly.
It will smell like beer.
Right.
You're right.
Exactly.
Yes. And if my nose is running and my feet are smelly, I'm built upside down.
And we're getting really stupid here. And
yes,
we're going to be doing so without the anchor of
phone
intelligent
calls.
People calling in and asking us intelligent questions.
You're going to have to deal with us for a while.
Well, there's an awful lot of issues going on around the Trump election. But one of the things that we'd like to say early on is that most of what you're reading or hearing about Trump and the Trump administration and the Republicans in Congress has a magic word in the middle of it that indicates that nothing that is being said around that word is worth listening to. And the magic word is G-O-N-N-A, gonna.
Right.
Trump's gonna.
Right. Unless he says it, and even then you've got to say maybe that'll happen or not. He's good at changing his mind, and he seems to be reasonable about why he does it.
Well, for instance, Newt Gingrich was reported said this over the air, that when asked about the wall that Trump was going to build and Mexico was going to pay for, Newt Gingrich said something to the effect of that was a good campaign device, wasn't it, rather than affirming it, which indicates it's probably not going to happen.
Wait, you said the word not what going to happen?
Probably not going to happen.
Gonna.
Yeah.
That's a word we're not supposed to use because means we don't know.
That's right, but we don't know. That's the point. I frankly think that no one with any degree of certainty knows anything about what...
I have my degree in certainty.
You do?
Yeah, it's an uncertain thing, but I believe that it's there, certainly.
Is it from Schrodinger's cat university?
It could be.
Anyway, don't get too excited or even depressed, depending upon your point of view, about the things that you think or someone else thinks, or even some of the things that were said during the campaign. Because obviously, I think a lot of you have read, it's been in the headlines of the paper, that after discussions with President Obama, who President-elect Trump praised and said he was going to seek his advice, he determined that he probably is going to keep large sections, or at least some of
the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare Act.
And I thought it was pretty fascinating, the ones he said he wanted to keep, but that's beside the point. Like, he's here we go. He said he wanted to, leave Gunna out of this, keep.
It's so much fun, though.
The provisions that prevented insurance companies from not insuring people who had poor health, but probably wanted to get rid of the section that said everybody has to sign up for insurance.
Right. What he said during the election was very similar, so that's not a change. What he said during the election was that pre-existing conditions would still be covered, but the individual mandate was going to go away. So it's very similar to what he's saying now.
And the problem, of course, with that, anyone who understands insurance theory, is that means that you thought insurance premiums rose a lot this year. Just wait and see how much there's a phone in here that apparently maybe the Trump administration is calling us. So there is a phone that works in here. It's just
not hooked up to anything.
Right.
And it looks like it was produced in 1980.
That long ago?
It may have been a little bit. There is a digital readout on the front, but I think it looks like my calculator watch.
Somebody really wants to talk to you. Anyway, the point in the discussion is that one of the reasons that the average health care premium under the Affordable Care Act, and they're all under the Affordable Care Act now, went up 25% for 2017, and in our case, I think it was 28%.
You're right. It was more than that if we didn't change some of the ways. Yeah. If we just wanted to stay with exactly what we were, it was in the upper 30%.
So one of the reasons is because people with good health are not signing up for the Affordable Care Act. They're not signing up for insurance. So people with bad health are signing up for insurance, which means that the amount of money that the insurance companies are paying out is going up rather fast, which means they have to raise the premiums or go broke.
There's another factor in here. It's a really big factor, and it is kind of the elephant in the room. This is something that I had to explain. You know this. Many people who I've spoken to in person know this. The year that Obamacare was passed, the year that the Affordable Care Act came out, I read the darn thing. Yes, people quote very regularly, nobody read it. Well, I read it. I'm one of the nobodies, I guess. It's a very common thing that I am nobody. But nobody did read it. That was me.
You were one of the nobodies who read it.
Right. That is the clearest to say here. And there were good parts of the law. And people, I'm hearing cars screech off the road from me saying that at this point. There were some really horrible parts of the law. That means there's a baby in the bathwater. The good parts of the...
Which is where we wash babies.
Right, but you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well,
we've got drains now. I mean, indoor plumbing has really messed up that whole statement. But I think people will get the idea. Most of the Affordable Care Act was written by the Reagan administration. And I don't think that people realize that it was a Reagan push, and it didn't go very far. The next person to try to push it was Hillary Clinton, and it failed because she didn't include very much of anything from Reagan. Nancy Pelosi is the one that should get the credit for the act because she orchestrated it, and Obama signed it. Obama had a plan for his version of it during his election against Hillary Clinton. And his version of it sounds a lot more like what Trump is saying today. And I know that's causing other cars to screech off the road. If you read the words and not the rhetoric, there isn't that great a divide between the parties. And that's one of those things, again, that is truly shocking to people because we've just been through a mud-slinging, poo-wrestling match of an election where nobody could agree on it.
Mud-slinging, poo-wrestling?
Yes. Poo-wrestling. The whole thing about don't wrestle with the pig, you both get muddy. Well, it's not just mud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the pig likes it. Well, it appeared that both sides liked it this time. They were doing it with reckless abandon. But something to remind everyone about now is that when you get down to brass tacks, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of domestic policy when it comes to health care and taxes, there are some changes. But when compared with the changes that take place regularly in other countries, they're all very minor. When they're compared with what's been going on recently here, there are these massive shifts. But the reality is that we're debating on a very narrow scope of issues. Hillary Clinton voted for a fence on the border. Donald Trump wants a wall on the border. That was the debate point. How many people get taken out of the country? Hillary Clinton was not saying we should keep the illegals here. She was talking about how do we do it gently, taking them away. And I realize people will hear that and say I'm supporting Hillary Clinton or I'm pro Donald Trump. I'm trying to be realistic on the arguments that were taking place. And they really weren't that far apart. The rhetoric was a long ways apart, but the policies are not. You were going to say something.
Yeah, that basically both sides, and this is one of the fascinating things to me, at least. There was a lot of rhetoric in years gone by about building a fence along the entire southern border.
Right.
And the funny thing is the Obama administration did not oppose it.
Correct.
But the conservative Republicans in Congress refused to fund it.
Correct.
So
that was part of sequestration.
And I just think there's a lot of irony here. In other words, an awful lot of the rhetoric you heard during the campaign is what we call ill elephant rhetoric, irrelevant rhetoric.
Right.
Which means
ill elephant is better.
Yeah, and it doesn't. So what we know is coming is it will not be business as usual completely.
Right. There's going to be a lot of changes.
Right. And
some of them will be good and some of them will be bad.
As
always the case with government.
I am really optimistic, and we can talk about this more. We do have some commercials to play at some point. But
we do.
We got, and it is a little bit, it's a little bit esoteric, but it's so profoundly important to our economy and the world economy. We are in the world economy and in the United States economy, something known as a liquidity trap. And it's a classic economic situation where we've created a lot of liquidity. Interest rates are nearly zero.
When he says liquidity, it means that there's a lot of cash. People have a lot of
right.
savings. Corporations have a lot of savings. There's not as much debt as there used to be.
So what we have is a lot of cash rolling around, but people reluctant to spend it. And it takes a shock because we've been here before. The Japanese have been there for, 15 years? And we've been in these This is a relatively old, well-known, well-understood economic situation. Monetary policy, which is the stuff the Federal Reserve does, can only keep it from getting worse.
It's not good at making it better.
It can't fix it. And we had one, for example, in the 1930s. We had a liquidity trap. There was plenty of cash. There were low interest rates. Certainly, but businesses didn't want to spend, and
right.
the government
and
didn't want to spend.
This is an analogy or a story, maybe even an urban legend, but it's one that people can identify with. Remember the grandmas that stuffed the money in their mattresses?
Mm-hmm.
That's a liquidity trap, because they're never going to spend that.
Right.
And it's a just-in-case thing.
What it takes to break out of a liquidity trap and get the economy really functioning again is a lack of timidity. And Congress has exercised great timidity over the last, 10 years, 8 years, in that they have said, let's not spend money. And if we really need to worry about the fact that the deficit is too high, one of the really fascinating things is neither party mentioned deficit or debt in their platforms.
Right.
And nowhere in Trump's campaign did we hear anything about reduce the deficit or
balance budget?
Balance the budget, and
for good reason. It's probably not the right time to be looking at that.
Right, and I really think if he does what he promised to do in this, and I see some evidence that he probably will, and he increases spending on the military, he increases spending on infrastructure, and he cuts taxes, what's going to happen is, if Congress allows him to do that sufficiently, and the conservatives in Congress may not, because Donald Trump's a populist, but Congress is run mainly by conservatives.
It's a very different group of people.
And if the conservatives in Congress allow Donald Trump to do some serious deficit spending, he very well could do exactly what we did by going to war in World War II, which is blow us out of the rut.
Think
and
of
get
it
things
as
rolling again.
What he's proposed, if you think of it this way, it's like a magnified form of the Bush stimulus or of the Obama stimulus, only it is more like the original Bush stimulus from the dot-com burst recession rather than from the Great Recession era. That was very controlled, and they were trying to do it without shocking the economy. I think shocking the economy may be a good thing short term.
Right.
And this is something that everybody listening needs to hear. Populist movements.
Wait a minute. What did you just say? Everybody listening needs to hear?
If they're really listening, they need to hear it.
Everybody that's hearing needs to listen.
If you're listening, you need to hear this. And if you're hearing this, please listen closely. Populist movements about the economy are short-term, like eating candy. And our economy may need that right now. But it's just like what the common approach was coming out of World War II, and I think most of our listening audience tends to be fiscally conservative. Coming out of World War II, we spent a lot of money at the government level, training people coming back, gave the GI Bill. It was one of the greatest stimulus and investment in ourselves that we've ever done, and it did a great job. But it leads to a surety that the way to get out of any situation is for the government to spend money. And that led to Jimmy Carter, and it led to incredible inflation. Now, that's a long ways in the future, but this is where the Titanic's starting to turn. So it's a good idea.
Is that a metaphor? The Titanic is starting to turn over or left?
It's a good thing. I'll leave that up to you. So it's a good thing as long as it's not overdone. And we can hope that that's what the future is holding. Now, there are a bunch of social issues much more unknown than the fiscal issues, because since the election, the Trump administration that is forming is letting out information on what they're going to be doing fiscally, very carefully feeding it out with some assurance, with the people that are going to possibly be behind it being involved in the news. The social side of things, there's been no real update on. So leave that for a bit, and that's a different debate. It's not something we would normally cover anyway. The fiscal side looks to be, short-term, a really good deal.
I just completely agree. I think a lot of, among other things, President-elect Trump said that he would like to eliminate the tax deduction for children, counted, you know, when you the total number of deductions you get in the standard deduction. He had a whole series of things he wanted to eliminate.
But give a big credit for child care expenses,
right,
which right now doesn't exist. Neil is sitting here, and he has a daughter very close in age to my daughter. At the age where, in order to get child care to go to work, you have to spend your left arm and your right foot every month.
Which makes it very hard to be efficient at work.
Yes, and you get no benefit from that in the tax system, except for you get a very small tax credit. It's gone in less than the first week of your payment to the folks that are trained and sufficiently qualified to take care of infants. That's a problem, because that's part of the reason why productivity has not been growing. We have had and are having right now a very minor baby boom. And the folks...
All the babies that are born are minors?
Yes, and they will be for 18 years at least.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, so
checking on that. It's a minor baby boom.
Minor. Now, if we have a majority baby boom, then we've got some very weird health issues going on. So we have a minor baby boom happening, and that minor baby boom is leading to a slowness in the increase of productivity. We can look at it in the demographics. We can look at it in household formations, because there's a lot of money that's been growing, waiting to go out and buy a new house. Our tax code is not appropriately laid out to increase business. It's appropriately laid out to make Congress continually have power. And that's something that we're going to have to come to terms with. The fact that Donald Trump is talking about simplifying the tax code and lowering the taxes, long term, what that's going to do is it's going to increase the deficit. Short term, the simplification is going to cause a boom. The fact that Neil's been at the office with me all week, and I have a stack of new regulations sitting on my desk that I've been very effortfully digging my way through. New regulations on businesses slow down the economy. They may be worthwhile, but they can be written in ways that are simpler, that leave less up to the nuanced approach and more up to a generalized thing that says very simple regulations, hey, stop taking money from people you shouldn't take money from. I'll agree with that regulation any day. But when it talks about the font size you're allowed to use when describing one area of the economy versus another, now you're getting into an area that's not about protecting the public anymore. It's about maintaining jobs for the regulators. And that's a problem. So looking at the core issues that got the president-elect to his current position, lowering regulations, not that long ago, only about a month and a half ago, I did a whole program on this radio station, the whole episode, talking about regulations. And it wasn't long after that it became part of the president-elect's campaign. As I'm not trying to inflate my own ego there, but they obviously were listening to the program. No, I don't think they were, but you know, it may have, maybe. Regulatory controls are too stringent. To start a business is getting very, very hard. As a percentage of the businesses out there, startups and sole proprietors are at an all-time low for the United States. It's still far higher than any other developed nation, far higher. But for the United States, we're at an all-time low. 8% of the businesses running right now are startups.
I think we need to do some commercials.
Okay, let's do that. We'll be back after the commercials. If you would like to call in here, too bad you can't, because electricity issues have caused a shocking result.
No. I think it's a political issue. I think the telephone shut down because Trump was elected. We can start a rumor.
Any conspiracy is worth repeating. That's a good motto. And if it's a bad conspiracy, it's worth repeating three times.
Obviously, the two things were connected. They both happened at about the same time. Therefore,
causation and correlation are the same thing.
Exactly.
That's a good conspiracy to start.
Right. Okay. So we're going to do commercials.
Okay. And we'll be back.
See something?
And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And you normally would be able to call us in here at 773-1400, except for the fact that the phones don't work.
Yay! No, so not yay at all.
You might, during the week, you might want to call into the administrative number. And if you look it up, call the administrative number and said, make the phones work again.
So I can argue with those two bald guys that keep saying horrible things.
We want to talk on the radio. And maybe they'll get the phones fixed. Well,
unlikely, but possible.
Copper, we were just talking about this during the break. Copper has the best week in 5 years.
Unless you ask Copper, and then it says it's very hot in this foundry. If it says anything.
I don't know. I don't know. A lot of what we're saying right now is going over copper.
It is going over copper.
See? It said something.
It was censored by the American Censorship Bureau. It was saying bad words.
What? Copper is usually considered to be, by economists, a good indicator of where the economy is going to go. And the reason is because when you build things, buildings or whatever, there's a lot of copper goes into those buildings. And it is because there's wires and things of that nature. And when the economy, the building industry specifically, or construction industry in any form, including or even manufacture, is going to rise, typically
copper
well in advance, people start ordering their copper. Because it takes a little, you can't just say, oh, let me yank some copper out of the ground and give it to you. It takes, there's a period of time for it to build up.
It's a process that goes there, yeah.
So copper rose.
Again, copper is not one of those things that is a high level of recycling event, because most copper isn't created in a form that people get rid of regularly. It's not like aluminum. It's not like steel. Copper tends to be used for very long periods of time and be involved in machines that it takes a lot of work to get it out of. So there's a big lead up to copper purchases.
Copper rose 11%, which is really impressive. For 1 week, for copper to rise 11%, but at it ended the week at $5,529 a ton, and that really sounds impressive until you think about the fact that back in 2011 it was $10,000 a ton,
right?
Which means that we're almost back to half of the price we had before. Oil, by the way, did very much the same thing. It got back to not quite about 40% of the price it used to be.
It's measured in different kinds of tons, the TUN ton, the barrel form.
Oh, yeah, but still the value.
33 gallons.
So the point is that there, at least in the people who are guessing about the future, who are putting their money behind it, and that's the people who generally have the most reliable bets about the future, although even those can be messed up. They're saying that the infrastructure, the fact that the Trump administration is aiming to increase infrastructure spending, which, by the way, the Clinton administration was going to also.
Right. It's fascinating to me that it waited till after the election for people to bid up the price of copper. If you were watching either candidate and you were interested in buying copper in the future, you would say it's going to get more expensive soon.
Well, now this is the point. Gary Johnson could have won.
In what world? in a world where Gary Johnson wins the presidency.
What, he got 6% of the vote or something?
I don't know that he got the full 6%, actually. Oh. I think it was less than that.
Well, actually, didn't get any electoral votes.
No, he got zero electoral votes. And right. I think in certain states he got 6%, but there were states that he was on the ballot that he didn't even show up on the statistics. Very interesting.
Well,
this is something we should mention as well. We're considering starting a survey and probability service that we could fund very simply. It seems like it's a really easy business to be in. And you don't
call
have
up a bunch of people and ask them their opinion.
You don't even have to do that, because you're probably going to be wrong doing that too. So all we have to do is just speak with a great deal of confidence and change the numbers regularly. Just change them. And then we will have confidence and we'll have numbers and people will go, And they'll be about as accurate as what's out there these days.
But we have to get the news media to publish them.
Oh, that's not too hard. All you have to do is call it something intelligent sounding. If we use the word alpha somewhere in the name, if we use a number as the name, like 538, it's a good number. It's like number of representatives in the House. So we could say we're going to call it 100, because that's the number of senators. So, you know, we could go that way. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can call it 101, both for Dalmatians, and then you just throw in the vice presidential vote.
Well, I think they're still going to ask you, how many people did you call or contact?
All we have to do is we say that people are not answering the landline phones the way they used to. So we're using a new technology to get our interpretation of what people want. And that new technology is what we hear at the supermarket. So as we're wandering around, if we hear somebody say something political, we'll use that to change our numbers.
That may have actually worked better than the ones that
maybe it would have.
which brings up something I think is at least interesting.
Supermarkets or
no, the if you look at the number of cable subscribers in the United States, it's been declining at about 2% a year.
People are cutting the cord.
And currently it's about 48 million people in the United States subscribe to cable.
Wait a minute. 48 million households which means that there are
subscribers, households.
Yeah, I would say households.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people, but not compared to what it used to be. And
yeah,
the population's been going up.
And this is the point. The number of people now, when you say cable, that doesn't just mean you have coax running into your house. That means you're actually cable television. You're actually getting television from a satellite or something similar.
I'm going to do an informal poll right now. Does anyone in this room have even basic cable television? We got one out of three.
So one out of three Americans.
Yes. See,
in our new survey.
This is a good way to do it. New survey just came out. 33% of our survey showed our margin of error,
Neil,
could be plus or minus 100%.
I thought your intelligence had been decaying. Now I understand why. We actually had satellite TV was offered free deal for 60 days or something like this. So they came and they set up the antenna and they dug holes in the ground and they did all the things they need to do and they found
they
the
dug satellite. A hole in the ground to get to the satellite?
Well, to anchor the satellite antenna.
Oh, they dug it down to look up. I gotcha. All
right. Right. And that's called contrarianism. And we had the 60 days of free, and during the 60 days I surfed through the channels probably 3 or 4 times and came to the conclusion that my intelligence dropped 1 point every time I did that. And if I kept it up, I'd be a complete idiot. So we canceled it. But this is the point I was going to make. The number of subscribers to Netflix is almost equal to the total number of cable subscribers now. And it has risen since 2002 from about 23 million people subscribing to Netflix up to about 45 million, I say people, households subscribing to Netflix. And there's only like 47 million cable connections. The cable is dropping. The Netflix is rising.
And that's just one service. Amazon Prime is another one.
Right. So what?
There's a lot of other ones out there.
So what we're seeing is not only has the landline telephone is dying very quickly, even television is dying slowly, admittedly. But the internet is growing. The internet connect, people using the internet to get their information is growing quite quickly.
Well, another informal poll. AM radio. Everyone in this room is listening to AM radio right now. So according to our informal poll, 100% of Americans listen to AM radio. And that's grown. Last week, it was only there were only two, and now there are three. So the population of the United States is growing at a drastic rate. So
and
our margin of error, again, I have to inform you, is plus or minus 100%.
And I also think that your term grown has two meanings, and that's what people do when they listen to this.
Yeah, they're listening to this and groaning a lot.
So I guess if I were to bottom line this, one of the main reasons that the pollsters missed what was going on is that they made the false assumption that they could call people up on the telephone and get a response that was representative of what is going on in the world, and they can't. That's the problem.
This brings into the subject something that people were wondering, why are you talking about pollsters and so on?
Because they were wrong.
Well, they were wrong, and this is something that's part of our own internal scrutiny on the decisions that we're making and on the judgment calls that we make, in that the Bureau of Labor Statistics has a very similar process in getting its unemployment figures out. We always take those figures with a large grain of salt, maybe a huge salt crystal.
Not me.
You know those crystals with the lights underneath them made out of salt? Mm-hmm. I think we take the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers with that. ADP, on the other hand, is a really good number to look at. ADP is the largest payroll provider. They do a lot of small businesses. There are a lot of large businesses that they provide payroll services to as well. And the way they do their numbers is not calling people up. The way they do their numbers is, these are how many people got paid through our service. It's a very accurate thing. It doesn't represent the entire United States, but neither did calling 1,000 people on a telephone. So keep that in mind when we're talking about unemployment. We are weighing in the private employment numbers that we get from services that there is no margin of error, because they know how many people got paid in their service.
Well,
there is a margin of error outside that, but if you just take the numbers they provide and don't try to extrapolate to the rest of the United States, just say this is a good number or a bad number. That's how we start trying to make our decisions.
But in defense of the bureaucrats.
And they are good bureaucrats.
They use cell phone numbers as well.
They do. But one of the stand-up comedy routines that I enjoyed very much lately is that when you're listening to polls, you should recognize that it isn't the percentage of people in the United States that feel that way. It's the percentage of people who decide to take that phone call that feel that way. Mm-hmm. And that is a true separator in how we look at reality. Because most of our listeners are not that interested in spending time talking to a phone service somewhere with voices in the background as they talk about how you feel about your life. And that's going to be something that gets larger over time, and we don't really have a good substitute for that right now. The internet is not a good substitute because it requires you to be on a website before you know what to do. And if you look at the Drudge Report numbers, they did their own informal polls, and it had 90% of the Electoral College going to Donald Trump. And if you went to MSNBC and did its poll, it had 90% of the Electoral College going to Hillary Clinton. And neither of those was anywhere near true. So where you go influences the news that you get, obviously, and that influences the news that they give.
Well, the LA Times poll was right.
Yes, it was. And it was spot on the whole time.
That's probably the future, where you actually select representative people around the country and offer to pay them to give you.
That's probably the best way to do it, but then people actually have to pay money out to get paid for their numbers. And
we can talk about that next hour, the importance of paying for something.
I think it's a good idea to pay for things if you want quality things. You know, sometimes you can create your own, in which case other people may pay you for it if it's quality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a pretty good, you get what you pay for isn't said because they don't mean it.
Yeah, I've had some discussions with people who said, well, I heard this morning, did you hear that Trump said, and I said something about requiring all Muslims to register. And I said, no, he didn't say that. Well, I saw it on a news site, and I said, how much did you pay for the news site?
Well,
it's free. And I said, well, that tells you. I said, if it was real, he'd really said that after he was elected.
All right, we're about out of time this hour. We'll be back next hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weekends and real live people answering the phones during the weekdays. You can call us locally at
947-1111. That's 947-1111. We made it really simple so I could remember.
You can reach that toll free at 1-800-914-7526. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Fox News Station, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.